This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The whole Pacifica network, including KPFT, is at the most significant crossroads in its 60-year history. Nationally, music and culture and news media outlets are dwindling and becoming increasingly homogenized and corporatized. KPFT and the other Pacifica stations are the only places left where you can hear the news and music and information that really makes a difference in your community. It's what folks here in Houston really care about. But that crossroads is not only about media opportunity. It's about how the younger generations have gone through a national election cycle that has made them optimistic and ready to change the world, much in the same way young people felt in the early decades of KPFT. Suddenly, the old hippies and the young hipsters are all working towards the same goals. The tough thing is that just when we have an opportunity to engage all of that energy and passion, all of the Pacifica stations are at huge financial risk. We always work on shoestring budgets, but right now, with the current economic crisis, those shoestrings are being stretched to the breaking point. So this is when you can make the biggest difference. It's when we need you the most. We need you to step up and run for the board. The KPFT local station board quite simply shapes the future of KPFT. Here's a lowdown on what the board does. The local board makes recommendations to Pacifica's national executive director regarding the management of their station. The local board sends four of its members to be a part of the national board. That means they have an impact on stations all across the country. The local board approves the station budget. They oversee how the money is spent, and they also make sure there's enough money to spend. And most importantly, they make sure that everything that we do here at KPFT is fulfilling the mission of Pacifica. That's not some theoretical description. It's hugely important, real-world work. We have 24 members on the board, and although that sounds like a lot, when you think about the diversity of our programming and the diversity of the Houston community, that's only 24 voices around that table. That's a lot of ground to cover. That's why we need you to run. The nomination deadline is July 15th at 5 p.m. The deadline to become a member of KPFT so you can vote for the board is also July 15th. All the information you need about elections is on kpft.org. That's kpft.org. In order to make it even easier, we've scheduled a couple of election parties so you can get the information you need, gather the nomination signatures you need to qualify, and you can get all of your questions answered in person. So go to kpft.org, read about the election process, download the nomination packet, and come on down to the station at 419 Lovett for one of the election shindigs. That's Saturday, July 11th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and Wednesday, July 15th from 2 until 5 p.m. That's the deadline for nominations. You may only vote with an official ballot that KPFT will mail to members who are current as of July 15th. If you're already a member, please make sure your mailing information is up to date. If you're not currently a member but you would like to vote, you will need to join by July 15th. For membership, please call 713-526-4000 extension 314 during regular office hours, or send an email with your name, address, and phone number to membership at kpft.org. In keeping with the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation, the local station board is composed of listeners, volunteers, and staff, elected to bring diverse voices from our region into the dialogue between community and the station, and to assist with fundraising, community outreach, program support, and general organizational governance. The local station board, quite simply, shapes the future of KPFT. There are three ways to qualify to vote and run. Contribute at least $25 to one of the stations, complete 30 or more verified hours at a Foundation radio station, or obtain a special waiver from the local station board. Complete voting, nomination, and deadline information is on our website at kpft.org. We're looking for board delegates who have fresh perspectives, creative energy, and a dedication to bring together all aspects of the community that's at the heart of KPFT's mission. We hope you'll join us. If you have any questions, please contact me. I'm Election Supervisor Ann Shaw, and I'm at 713-526-4000, extension 303. Or you can email me at election@kpft.org. That's election@kpft.org. Thank you for listening. This is KPFT Houston.
Hello, Pacifica listeners. My name is Dr. Helen Caldicott, and I'm here to talk about Pacifica Radio and how at this very point in time, you, the listener, are crucial to its survival. You have the chance to participate in this network in a profoundly meaningful way. The Pacifica election process has begun, and you can actually serve on the local governing boards that have real power to make significant changes. Your radio station isn't run by a media mogul, a bunch of rich cronies or a bunch of slick advertising people. It's actually run by the people who care about it, you. Media democracy? Democracy in media? Sounds strange, doesn't it? Almost un-American. But it's true. The five radio stations owned by the Pacifica Foundation are controlled by their members. That's right, you members out there who've donated $25 or more in the last year are about to decide the fate of this precious media consortium. Why is Pacifica Radio so important? Because it's the only network that's non-biased and can therefore tell the truth to the American people. There's simply no other media in the USA that tells the truth like Pacifica Radio or Amy Goodman. Indeed, most of them lie through their teeth day in and day out. You Pacifica listeners know very well that this is the most critical time in planetary life that we as a species have ever faced. Free speech radio is therefore incredibly precious, and what makes it even possible is democratic participation. Listeners like you stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility for your media. Members can become local station board members. Local board members can become national board members. And the Pacifica National Board is the legal entity that has the power to make all important decisions for this network. You must take an active role in running these stations. They are yours, and as such, you must help to propel them into the best listened stations in the country, to guide them in the right direction, and to put forward our shared progressive democratic ideals, to create debate and critical thinking. Why should I care, you ask? Well, here's why. Because the Pacifica bylaws give the local station board the power and responsibility to 1. Make recommendations to the executive director for the hiring and firing of each station's general manager, 2. Approve each station's annual budget, and 3. Ensure that the programming at each station conforms to the mission of Pacifica. If you want to run for the board, the first thing you need to become is a member by donating $25 or more by July the 15th, 2009. That's easy. If you're already a member, you are already qualified to run for the board. Next, you need to fill out the paperwork to be a candidate. You can download all the paperwork from www.pacifica.org/elections, or you can call 866-PEACE, PEACE01, 866-PEACE, PEACE01, and they will send you a candidate's packet. Being on the local station board will take between 10 to 20 hours of your volunteer time per month. If you don't have the time to spare, it's still terribly important that you make sure your membership is up to date so that you can vote for those who are willing to serve. That number again is 866-PEACE01. You must submit all of your written materials before midnight, July the 15th, in order to qualify as a listener candidate. I urge you to take action and stand for your deepest held beliefs. As George Orwell wrote, in times of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So please run for the board and bring in good governance. Tell the truth. Push forward the Pacifica mission. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott. Thanks so much for caring about this station, this network, and indeed, our beautiful, beloved planet.
KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt.
And on the show tonight, Joe Burns, who represents District 9 of Fort Worth, will be joining us shortly to discuss the TABC raid on a gay bar in Fort Worth on Gay Pride Day last month. Then on News Wrap, the state of Massachusetts sues the federal government to challenge the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, while in Washington, D.C., the law recognizing same-gender marriages legally performed elsewhere goes into effect. And Iraq War vet Congressman Patrick Murphy is the new lead sponsor of a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and coverage of that bar raid again in Fort Worth during Gay Pride. At 10 o'clock, Sonia Alton, Community Relations Manager for Legacy Community Health Services, will be joined by Miss Ginger Grant to discuss one of Legacy's latest fundraisers, Miss Mint Julep. This year, the event will be held at the BRB, the Brazos River Bottom, on Sunday, July 19th. Then in the second hour, Joan Devlin joins us from Iowa with an interview with the author of a book about creating a more sustainable lifestyle. It's called The Sharing Solution. And then finally, in our second hour, the This Way Out features segment in celebration of Pride Month, the Pacifica Radio Archives launched a GLBT time capsule project. They put out a call for people in the Los Angeles area to come in and record their personal stories and any messages they'd like to leave behind to be rebroadcast 50 years in the future. And among the people who responded were two amazing youngsters, a 13-year-old and his 16-year-old sister, who took the opportunity to go into the studio by themselves and interview each other. And that is what's going to be on our show this evening. And I guess we're going to have to...
Yep, that must be Joel calling back in. Mm-hmm. He texted me saying he was on hold. We apologize that we had a little bit of a run over from our previous show that we had to take care of right there in the first 7 minutes of our show.
So hopefully you're still listening with us.
Yes, and if you're not, wake up! Because it almost put me to sleep, and I'm here in the audience.
And you're like volunteered to be here.
I'm here. I'm volunteering to be here. We have Joel Burns on the phone with us. Joel, you there?
Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I am doing well. Really, thank you very much for being on the show tonight. Thank you for your patience. For those of you who must have been living in a cave somewhere, you may not know about the raid that was on a gay bar in the Rainbow
Lodge.
Rainbow Lounge.
That's what I thought. We have a Rainbow Lodge here. Yeah. It's Rainbow Lounge in Fort Worth, Texas, which was really a surprise and very
bad timing.
Timely in a negative way. Yeah. It was the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. Joel, what has transpired since then?
Well, it's one of those things that when life gives you lemons, sometimes you make lemonade. It has certainly been a very unfortunate occurrence, a very disappointing one, and the timing couldn't have been worse. But given that it happened when it did, it brought some added light to some things that we in Fort Worth need to take on in terms of additional police training, some other things like that. And there is certainly reason for outrage. There is certainly reason for frustration on the part of the GLBT community with what happened in Fort Worth. But I will tell you that some of the national media stories that we've seen, I didn't hear the intro to this, but I think it's important for me to tell your listeners that I am an openly gay member of the city council here in Fort Worth. In fact, mm-hmm. I'm one of five openly gay municipal elected officials in the entire state, which is kind of pitiful given how many elected officials we have in the state. What has come out of this is that there's this perception that Fort Worth is this backwoods redneck city, and the reality is we're one of the very first cities in the state of Texas to pass non-discrimination ordinances for LGBT and T. people in both housing and in employment. We did that back in the year 2000. And this is
bless you.
We don't have that here.
We're still trying to get that here.
Well, it's certainly been a black eye, but I think it's also an opportunity. I just walked out of a Stonewall Democrats club meeting that went on for about 2.5 hours. And one of the things that's coming out of this is that, you know, Fort Worth, because of our proximity to Dallas, Our gay and lesbian community, if they want to go out to a big bar, they're going to drive 45 minutes to the east and go out there. And so the culture of Fort Worth's gay and lesbian community isn't centered around kind of a gay ghetto or a strip center of a strip of bars or things like that. It's a much more integrated community. Fort Worth is a place where people, you know, marry up and settle down, and they're in the east side of Fort Worth, the south side of Fort Worth, the west side of Fort Worth. They're spread throughout all of Fort Worth, and it's a very integrated into the larger community type gay and lesbian community. But with that, people perceive the gay and lesbian community as being silent or quiet or sleepy. And we've been woken up, and we've found a voice in the last couple of weeks. And so this has certainly been, again, an incredibly unfortunate situation that happened out of the police action on the Sunday morning. I guess it was June the 29th or 30th. But there have been some good things that have come out of that. Fairness Fort Worth was the organization 10 years ago that started pushing for a non-discrimination ordinance here in the city of Fort Worth. After they had achieved what they wanted to achieve, they essentially disbanded over a period of time. Well, they're back organized. They have some really good folks who've gotten involved, including John Nelson, who's a local attorney, who's going to be their spokesperson. They're going to be at city council meeting tomorrow. You might be interested. Our city council meets on Tuesday nights. We have a two-week break on the Tuesday before and after 4th of July, so we have not met since this happened. And with that, we're going to have a really long council agenda tomorrow, but we're also going to have a lot of folks. I understand that there are literally hundreds of people from all over the state who are coming in for our council meeting tomorrow night. It should be quite the lively experience. A number of people tonight at the Stonewall Democrats meeting said that they were coming for other organizations like the ACLU, the statewide Stonewall, Fairness Fort Worth. A number of organizations are going to be there tomorrow night. And I really do think that you're going to start seeing a change in Fort Worth in terms of how we address our LGBT community. The chief of police, we've never had a liaison to the LGBT community from the police force. We've got that now. We have not done a very good job of LGBT sensitivity training when we do other cultural sensitivity training with our police force, and we're going to be changing that soon. And we're also looking at opportunities so that the entire city, I mean, because we need to have people involved in the LGBT community, not just in our police force, but in our fire department and in our code enforcement department and in all areas of city government. And the city manager has made a commitment. He and I had breakfast this morning, and we're going to have that type of involvement throughout the city.
Now, Joe, this is Brian Levinka. I understand that there was a raid and people were arrested. What exactly were people arrested for?
All the arrests were made for public intoxication.
Inside a bar?
Inside a bar. Which I want you to keep in mind that this was a joint action with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission. The TABC is conducting its own independent investigation into this, concurrently with the City of Fort Worth investigation. I understand that they're more likely to release their results sooner than what we probably are. We're looking at another 3 to 4 weeks before the report is issued, just because of it's involving more people. There were 10 officers who have so far been identified in the action, both the initial visit on Thursday and the repeat bar check on Saturday night, Sunday morning. And so they have to go through the process with all of those officers and all the people that we've had as witnesses. We do not have as many people as I would hope, but they've done 34 interviews. Unfortunately, some of them are people who were not actually inside the bar. They came in after many of the actions had already happened. So we're really, really hopeful that other people, if they have not testified or made statements or interviewed with the City of Fort Worth Internal Affairs Department, I really hope that they would. Let me give you my city council office number. It's 817-392-8809 in case anyone's visiting you down there in Houston and Galveston who happened to be there that night. We certainly need to have folks show up so that this investigation is thorough and we can say that we made a thorough, fair, impartial an independent investigation for what happened.
Well, Joel, this is Jennifer. I read the report from the police department, their statement that they issued, and in careful reading of it, I still didn't see anywhere in there, it was all the drunk's fault, but it doesn't give any explanation for the gentleman, Mr. Gibson, who was seriously injured.
That is correct. But like I said, we've had 34 people so far who saw all or part of that incident, who've come forward so far. I'm hopeful that we'll find more. And we're going to find out what happened. And it's going to require an independent investigation. The U.S. attorney's involved. But I really do think that to reassure folks, it's going to require more than just the City of Fort Worth Internal Affairs Department and the U.S. attorney involved. I think we need to have an outside agency. One of my council colleagues and I will be calling for that tomorrow at the council meeting for not just a thorough internal investigation, but also an external independent investigation. And we're going to find out what exactly happened, and we don't know until that point.
Now, another thing I did pick up when I was doing my research to the interview tonight, this last Saturday, there was another raid on a Dallas gay bar.
The Dallas Eagle.
The Dallas Eagle Club. Did you hear about that?
Yes. The action at the Dallas Eagle was also TABC. It was a very different outcome. It was a situation where it was a bar that had just reopened in a new location. They had not taken out all the paperwork that they were supposed to do with the TABC. The management acknowledged that, and the TABC just closed the bar, and there was no incidents of any kind of violence. There was no other action that happened, nothing unfortunate like what happened in Fort Worth, and they just closed the bar. And with that, everyone turned out the lights and locked the door, and subsequently the Dallas Eagles gotten the paperwork that they were supposed to have had beforehand, is my understanding.
Well, Fort Worth is fortunate to have someone like yourself on council who will stand up for our community and do something. I want to acknowledge you for that.
Well, thank you. One of the things that I said at tonight's Stonewall Democrats meeting, someone said, well, what can we do? And they were asking about the more immediate, you know, what can we do now in addition to coming to Tuesday night's council meeting, and who can we call and who can we? But the other thing that's important to remember, you know, I got elected at the end of 2007. I represent the district that literally butts right up to where this bar is. The district lines come within two blocks of where this bar is. People at that Stonewall Democratic Club were very active in my campaign. They were very integral in getting me elected. They were very integral in getting Wendy Davis, who is the state senator who represents this area, to elected, who turned out a very conservative guy who is a Republican in a largely Republican district, and they've got a state representative in Lon Burnham who is very sensitive to the needs of the gay and lesbian community. Had we not been elected, and I'm not trying to be big-headed about this, but had there been no one to turn to, I don't know that we would have gotten some of the questions answered that we have asked as quickly as we did. I don't know that we would have had the investigations going as immediately as we had. I don't know that we would have had some of the answers that we got within, 72 hours of all of this starting. And so that's something that all of your listeners, I mean, you've got an opportunity down there in Houston. You've got the Anise Parker race coming up for Houston Mayor. You've got other races. There are other both gay and lesbian individuals and friends and allies. And get involved in those campaigns. Make sure that when something unfortunate does happen, that you've got an elected representation who will go to bat for you. It's so imperative.
Well, that's important for any group, and thank you for saying that. We've got an opportunity here to take a step forward, because we've had, well, for about 12 years, we've had, no longer than that, because Anise is in her 11th year. So it's about 12 years, we've had at least one, a lesbian on city council that's been there to be our voice in instances like this.
We have two.
Yeah.
Well, no, well, at one point we had two.
Yes, we did.
And you still do. You have Sue Lovell, who's also on council.
Right, we do now. See, we've got Sue, who is on council, and then, of course, Anise is currently the controller for the city of Houston and running for mayor. Well, is there anything specific we can do down here in Houston to help out the cause?
Can you give us that number again for people that might have seen something?
My city council office number is 817-392-8809, 817-392-8809. And if someone is uncomfortable, if because the action came from the police to begin with, and if they're hesitant to come out and give testimony because they have to go to the police department to do that, Fairness Fort Worth, along working with Stonewall Democrats and other organizations, have put together a group of attorneys with the help of the ACLU to basically take depositions from those people who are uncomfortable with coming to talk to the police department. I don't think it's as effective, but it's still an opportunity to get witnesses to come forward and give their testimony. So if you would prefer that, I will put you in contact with the group that's doing that. They're actually having a session all Wednesday evening, I think, from 5 o'clock until 8 o'clock at Celebration Community Church on Pennsylvania Avenue here in Fort Worth, which is a predominantly LGBT church here that's within probably 6 blocks of where the bar is in the near south side of downtown, near south side of Fort Worth. So there are other opportunities that people are hesitant to come forward and speak directly to the police department.
Well, I want to thank you, Joel. We've been talking with Joel Burns, a representative for District 9 in Fort Worth, an openly gay representative, a city council member. Joel, we appreciate this. Keep up the good work.
Jennifer, Renee, it's always good to talk to a friend. Have a great rest of your show, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, this is
bye-bye.
Queer Voices.
I played with my Barbie when I was a kid. It sure was the most fun thing that I ever did. But when Daddy found out, boy, he flipped his lid. I should have been born a girl. My Daddy, he said, are you my daughter or son? And I said, oh, Daddy, do I have to pick one? Then I'll be your daughter. It's so much more fun. I should have been born a girl. You have to understand I have a feminine side. And feeling soft and pretty isn't something to hide. I like wearing makeup, it covers my flaws. I go get a facial to close up my pores. I dress as a woman, I do it because I should have been born a girl. Although I'm a fella, I carry a purse. I don't get my period, but something much worse. Too much testosterone is really the curse. I should have been born a girl. So who am I? I often sit and wonder. Did nature make a terrible blunder? I just got a letter, I read it, and wow, I've just been accepted as a member of NOW. Although I'm a fella, I joined anyhow. I should have been born a girl. Well, I think I have the answer, so that when I get home, I'll look through all the want ads for an X chromosome. I'd love to be female, think I'll give it a whirl. I should have been born a girl.
Pacifica listeners. My name is Dr. Helen Caldicott, and I'm here to talk about Pacifica Radio and how at this very point in time, you, the listener, are crucial to its survival. The Pacifica election process has begun. Media democracy? Democracy in media? Sounds strange, doesn't it? Almost un-American, but it's true. The five radio stations owned by the Pacifica Foundation are controlled by their members. That's right, you members out there who've donated $25 or more in the last year are about to decide the fate of this precious media consortium. If you love this planet, my show is not heard on radio stations that get their money from defence contractors and oil companies and the Nuclear Energy Institute. They might manage to greenwash themselves on some so-called public media outlets, but not Pacifica. We take no corporate funding, and that has always made the difference. Why is Pacifica Radio so important? Because it's the only network that's non-biased and can therefore tell the truth to the American people. And what makes it even possible is democratic participation. Listeners like you stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility for your media. Members can become local station board members. Local board members can become national board members. You must take an active role in running these stations. They are yours. And as such, you must help to propel them into the best listened stations in the country. You can download all the paperwork from www.pacifica.org/elections, or you can call 866-PEACE, PEACE01. As George Orwell wrote, in times of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So please run for the board and bring in good governance. Tell the truth. Push forward the Pacifica mission. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott. Thanks so much for caring about this station, this network, and indeed, our beautiful, beloved planet.
KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And one of the great organizations in our community, HRC, is holding a...
That's a human rights campaign.
Of course.
All right. Well, say something you might not know.
Yeah. And for HRC, Human Rights Campaign, is holding a forum this weekend for gender identity and our faith communities. And in the studio tonight, we have E.B. Allen.
Hello.
And
on the phone, we have Megan Stegler. Are you there?
I am. Hello again.
Hello to you, too.
How are you, sweetie?
Hey, I'm doing well. Well, Saturday's the big day. Tell us about what's going to be happening on Saturday.
Sure. Saturday is the big day, or the big morning, I guess is the best way to put it. And what we're going to be doing is a religion and faith training centered around gender identity for... essentially pushing forward with both our allies and friends, as well as maybe those that are unknown or unknowing about transgender issues, really pushing forward on the need for transgender justice, not just about gender identity in the Bible itself, but really also about what can we be doing now, especially with gender, hate crimes, etc., to try and get more allies to support us.
And when is it going to be? Now it's at Resurrection Metropolitan Church, if I understand.
Correct. It's at Resurrection Metropolitan Church. It's 2025 West 11th Street here in Houston. From registration's at 9 o'clock till 9:30. 9:30 is when we start the program. It's a three-hour program with a couple of breaks interspersed. And essentially it's this advocacy workshop that's going to empower everybody that attends with both the knowledge and the skills to help with inside of their own congregation and, most importantly, with inside of a community into welcoming transgender individuals so that we can begin to advocate for those rights that we don't have.
Now, who's going to be participating in this?
Well, it's open to anybody. Essentially, I'm leading it. So I've done this at other locations here in Texas, most recently being at an MCC church in El Paso. But it's open to anybody who wants to be involved. I mean, whether or not you're coming at this from a background in faith or in scripture, or you just want to learn more about the issues. You know, the idea here is that too often verses are taken out of the Bible. Pieces of scripture are taken and used against us. So as to both educate about transgender issues, about the tasks that lay ahead of us when we transition, or maybe we don't even transition. We just want to identify in a different non-gender conforming way. And to try and then back that up with our own verses in the scriptures, and to also show that, you know, the Bible really doesn't say anything about people that are transgender or gender identity. So to try and help educate is probably the best thing that we can do, and education through the scripture as well as firsthand knowledge.
Yeah. A.B., what is you're going to be participating? You're going to be participating in it, and in what form?
Right. Well, I've done a lot of the online advertising for it, and I just wanted to piggyback on what Megan has already mentioned. Say it's going to be a great opportunity to reach out within our community and also to our straight allies to try to educate about a lot of transgendered issues. If you'd like any more information, I suggest you go ahead and look on Facebook. Additionally, we have some information up on hrchouston.org, and you can RSVP. There are RSVP links, and as Megan had mentioned, anyone is welcome. We look forward to seeing y'all.
Okay. And is there a cost, or is it free?
It is 100% free, which is great in this recession.
We love that.
Right. With coffee.
Extension.
Right. And Bryce, okay, so you said there's going to be, we'll be empowering people and informing them, and you said there'd be some breaks, so that it sort of gives me the idea it's going to be about an hour and then a break and so on and so forth. What are going to be the sessions like?
It's going to be broken into three sort of sessions. The first one is obviously an education introduction about transgender issues. The second piece is then getting together and, you know, looking at different pieces inside of scripture and examining the way that it can be used or can be interpreted. And having, with the size of group that we're expecting, I think we're already registered at about 48 for this event. So we'll be breaking into some small groups to do some mini workshop type of activities. And then the third piece at the end of it is, now how can you help advocate on behalf of transgender people? So if you have now an understanding of the issues and what we can do to advance workplace legislation, what we can do to advance an inclusive agenda that is still in markup right now, what we can do to try and get our senators to move hate crimes through once it comes up to the floor for a vote, or for any of the healthcare reform issues that are going to be coming up shortly. How can you, as a person of faith, as a member of a congregation, or just a person off the street, go ahead and help advocate for that? And it's open for all members of the community. So if we have transgender folks that would like to attend, we're very open to having them be there as well. Anybody that is part of MCC Church, or anybody that is not part of MCC Church but, you know, wishes to come in and understand some new ideas and some new concepts and move forward with inside of their community or their congregation.
I want to take a moment, since you mentioned that, to acknowledge Resurrection MCC as an advocating congregation who has gone out of its way many times to support gender identity issues and forums like this for educational purposes. So I want to acknowledge them for that. They've been out front more so than a lot of other religious institutions.
And I think we should not acknowledge HRC for taking a role in gender, this inclusion of gender. I know they've been dinged in years past for not including gender in the T for the GLBT. So I applaud HRC coming forward and kind of leading this community forum.
Yeah, and it's you know, we're not trying to lay a claim to a segment of the community. We're just, this is a national program. You know, HRC as an organization, is made up of many individual parts. One of those parts is the religion and faith program. So some of those sponsorship dollars that we get at HRC go towards religion and faith program so that we can reach out to other faith-based organizations and start to educate them with regards to LGBT issues. So this is actually one of the programs that we've been running since the beginning of the year throughout the United States, from West Coast to East Coast and right in the heartland of the United States, too.
Megan, can you speak to the national effort that HRC is doing on faith, religion and faith?
I can. You know, we're convening a lot of, as I say, ministers and faith-based groups to try and educate from the clergy level and bring together, you know, regardless of faith. So, you know, denominational, I'm going to say the words, faith, to try and educate, which I think, Jennifer, is one of the words that you used before, the different faith-based religions that may, you know, not be for LGBT issues. And I think, you know, I don't know if anybody even read the news today, but even the Episcopal Church House of Deputies, those are the priests and the lay leaders, just today, I think it was, or yesterday, overwhelmingly approved a resolution to open the gates to gay bishops, right? They still have that intangible link to the Anglican faith, which largely disapproves of it, but they're moving forward. And I think that's a great thing that we begin to see, is that more and more different religions and faiths begin to accept openly gay clergy, so that we can be inclusive in that environment too.
Well, I agree, and it's important for, you know, us to distinguish between what the Bible says concerning faith and concerning GLBT people and the dogma of certain religions and certain evangelical movements that really have twisted the words of the Bible to suit their own homophobic feelings.
Indeed. I mean, you know, I grew up on a Catholic faith and, you know, had to do a lot of soul searching myself around various issues. But, you know, the things that we do face as a community where people will selectively choose a piece of scripture and then either cause an abomination or, you know, other things that they wish to go ahead and do or say and base it off of religion is completely wrong. I mean, the world has changed so much from when the Bible was first written. I mean, churches a long time ago, or faith-based ministries a long time ago, even from accepting, you know, divorcees back into the church for remarriage, you know, the Bible has got some definitive things around that. And even if you look at, you know, any of the mentions of Jesus in and throughout the Bible, he never mentioned gay or lesbian or homosexual or anything else. So, you know, there's a lot of pieces of scripture that do get used out of context. And, you know, if we go back to 3,800 years for the Bible itself, you know, things were very different back then. And I think human understanding, human difference, and human acceptance is not going to go away. And we need to embrace that and use whatever we can do in a logical way to show that, you know, we are to be included. And there are a number of us, obviously, that still believe in our faith and that we still believe in various issues, having grown up on those.
Absolutely. Evie, you're expecting for yourself, what do you expect this weekend?
Well, I'm hoping that this weekend can help to empower members in our community who have perhaps been struggling with their faith, having conflicting issues. Some churches are not as kind as Resurrection MCC, and I think they teach a message of hate. And on a national level, we really have to unite as a community and show that we are okay with ourselves. And it's not until we are showing that we're okay with ourselves that other people will truly accept our community and say, hey, y'all are right. So that's one piece of it. And the other side of it is, of course, with our allies in the faith-based organizations, getting some type of education that they may not have access to before. I think for many individuals, this could be their first interaction with the idea of transgendered and faith, or transgendered and religion, and the, I guess, the specific relationship between those two and how to address that. So I think all of this will be very educational, and it'll be something that will empower not only me, but the community as a whole and the allies. So I think that what I hope to get from it is hopefully what others also hope to get from it. And the coffee, of course.
Well, I was one of the things, to address something that you just said, as well as what Megan said, is when I transitioned, I felt like, well, I had to give up my church because they wouldn't accept me there. And suddenly, if you are a person of faith who base your life on have a spiritual basis in your life, you suddenly find yourself lost when you're not welcome. And I'm sure that God didn't feel that way, and neither did Jesus Christ.
I think even inside our own community, there's a certain, I want to say, transphobia within the GLBT community. I mean, I see that there's maybe a division, and perhaps this forum can kind of bring people together. Because I don't think our community is united as we kind of proclaim.
I so agree with you on that comment, and you know, obviously, I'm very active in the LGBT community, and a lot of my both local and national activism or advocacy work that I do, I really don't distinguish between the L or the G or the T. Obviously, I have a particular emphasis on the T, but I am in a same-sex relationship. So for me, it is making sure that we educate within inside of our own community, and we do that by telling our stories. And that really is part of what the program is going to be about, is about the stories. And it's about using these things. So
I agree, and I think it's about coming out to people and people knowing a personal case, you know, someone that is transgendered and identifying with that person. And I'm afraid that maybe most of our community do not know transgender people.
Yeah, and I think the good thing is that we will also have some members of the Houston transgender community there as well. So, albeit, you know, they're not part of the program, you know, I'm going to be calling on them to share some stories and meet new people and try and share their experiences so that when we go through a number of the discussions, we do broaden the knowledge, you know, in the group that we have.
Well, I'm sure Jennifer will be there.
Yes, I will.
Wonderful.
And I wouldn't miss it for anything.
And I want to thank HRC again, because having conversations like this and having workshops like this and forums like this are a very important first step, because otherwise we will remain divided. So,
well, also in a venue like this, talking about faith and in our community and gender identity, there are individuals who of faith who don't believe that we have faith. It's like somehow or another we've been excommunicated from all forms of faith and belief in a higher power in mm-hmm. Jesus Christ because we happen to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender.
No.
And it's you know, taking that stigma and putting it to one side and exposing the truth that we're all spiritual beings here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Jennifer. I mean, you know, I think a lot of us can associate our childhood with the church in some way, shape, or form. You know, I remember being the choir boy and, you know, doing all those things and then having to question why and then, you know, eventually hide everything until I could eventually admit and deal with my own inner issues. And, you know, just down there on Westheimer and Sam Houston, you know, my office, BMC Software, is right there on the corner. And I remember many times at lunchtime or early evening, there's a very small little Catholic church on the corner. And I'd go down there and just sit and pray and cry my eyes out. So, but I never felt I could be part of that again. I never felt that I could be back inside, you know, the church with any form of respect. And, you know, we have to realize that whether male or female, we are essentially all one flesh. And that is in the very early forms of the Old Testament. So.
Absolutely. And beyond that, beyond the flesh, we're all spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with E.B. Allen as well as Megan Stabler, and this is about HRC's gender identity and faith community. And it's going to be Saturday.
Starting at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. That's the July 18th for y'all, if you're concerning that. And it'll be at Resurrection MCC, which is 2025 West 11th Street.
And it's the big church on the bayou down on 11th Street. You can't
absolutely
miss it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you so much, y'all.
Thanks.
All right. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Petitions were filed this week with India's Supreme Court challenging a state court ruling that declared the country's law against unnatural sex, Penal Code Section 377, to be unconstitutional. Only reversal by the nation's highest court, or parliamentary legislation, would prevent the Delhi High Court decision from becoming the law of the land. Swami Baba Ramdev, a yoga guru and Hindu television personality, filed one challenge, telling the Indian Express that homosexuality is a disease that can be treated like any other congenital defect by yoga, breathing exercises, and other meditation techniques. Astrologer Suresh Kumar Kaushal also filed a petition against the decision, falsely claiming that even animals don't indulge in such activities. He also warned that AIDS would be more easily spread if gay sex becomes legal. The Delhi High Court ruled on July 2nd that the ban on consensual same-gender sex between adults, enacted in 1860 during British colonial rule, violated human rights provisions of the Indian Constitution. The Supreme Court notified the government, whose ministers have been unable to agree on a unified position, and the NAS Foundation, the non-governmental group that led the legal fight against Section 377, that an initial hearing would be held on July 20th.
As the summer pride season wound down in the Northern Hemisphere, an estimated 1 million people celebrated in Madrid on July 4th. The annual parade in the Spanish city featured more than 30 floats and colorfully costumed participants. The marchers, who included the country's Minister of Education and other politicians, union groups, and youth organizations, focused on better protecting LGBT students and ensuring equal educational opportunities.
London's annual Pride Parade on the same day hosted crowds variously estimated at from 500,000 to 1 million people. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown's wife, Sarah, joined the parade after the couple hosted an official reception for organizers and the LGBT press at 10 Downing Street. A rally and concert capped off the day in Trafalgar Square. Some speakers criticized the continuing ban on gay men donating blood, while others demanded full marriage equality instead of the all-but-the-name civil partnerships currently available to UK same-gender couples.
About a half million people thronged the center of Cologne on July 5th for the German city's annual Pride Parade, known as Christopher Street Day, to honor the liberation movement sparking Stonewall riots on that street in New York City's Greenwich Village in June 1969. According to a Deutsche Presse Agentur report, more than 90 brightly colored floats snaked their way through the streets in pleasant summer temperatures, accompanied by marchers in what the report called fancy or revealing costumes.
Agence France-Presse counted an estimated 100,000 raucous participants at Vienna's 14th annual Pride Parade on July 4th. Latex and leather-clad marchers converged on the Austrian capital's main avenue, the news agency reported, many on colorful floats. The participants' banners and chants called for national marriage equality.
And around 300 people marched in the second LGBT Pride Parade in Bulgaria's capital of Sofia on June 27th, reportedly twice as many as last year. Police and private security officers hired by event organizers protected the marchers to prevent a recurrence of last year's violence. Skinheads and right-wing extremists attacked the city's first parade with bottles, rocks, eggs, smoke bombs, and Molotov cocktails. Police made 80 arrests. This year's parade encountered nothing more serious than some booing. Marchers called for passage of a workplace anti-discrimination law.
In the U.S., the state of Massachusetts is suing the federal government over DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. That 1996 law denies federal recognition to legally united same-gender couples and allows states to refuse to recognize such legal unions performed elsewhere. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley argues in the lawsuit, filed in federal court in Boston this week, that DOMA interferes with her state's ability to define and regulate marriage. For example, Coakley said, DOMA requires Massachusetts, which enacted marriage equality in 2004, to violate the constitutional rights of its citizens by treating married heterosexual couples and married same-gender couples differently in its distribution of federal Medicaid benefits and Social Security payments to spouses. A federal challenge to DOMA was also filed in March by the Boston-based Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, the legal advocacy group that won marriage equality in the state.
Washington, D.C.'s law recognizing lesbian and gay marriage as legally performed elsewhere took effect on July 7th after opponents lost a court challenge seeking a public referendum on the matter. Congress, which has oversight on all D.C. laws, had 30 days to review the bill. It took no action, allowing the measure to become law. Openly gay city council member David Catania says it's the first step toward passing a marriage equality law in the city.
House committees held hearings in the nation's capital on the Domestic Partnership Benefits and Obligations Act, which would provide gay and lesbian federal employees with the same spousal benefits given to heterosexual workers. And the Safe Schools Improvement Act, which would fund school programs to prevent bullying and harassment on the basis of actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity.
And an Iraq war veteran has become the lead sponsor of a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. U.S. Representative Patrick Murphy, a Pennsylvania Democrat, is a former West Point professor who had earlier earned a Bronze Star, rising to the rank of captain in the Army's 82nd Airborne Division. He takes over as lead sponsor for Ellen Tauscher, who reintroduced the Military Readiness Enhancement Act earlier this year. She's leaving Congress to take a position with the Obama administration. The bill currently has 150 co-sponsors in the House.
Family members of murdered gay sailor August Provost III arrived in San Diego from their Houston home this week to claim his body and to keep the pressure on military officials to be forthcoming about the circumstances of the 29-year-old African-American man's murder. His family said the Navy told him that he was shot three times while serving sentry duty on June 30th at Southern California's Camp Pendleton Marine Base. His feet and hands were bound, his mouth was gagged, and the body had been burned. Naval investigators have insisted that the murder was a random act unrelated to his sexuality, but his family and community activists, joined by some local and state elected officials, have charged that it was more likely a hate crime. A person of interest is reportedly in custody, but no charges have been filed to date. About 100 people gathered near Camp Pendleton on the evening of July 10th for a candlelight vigil for the slain sailor. Family member Rose Roy said her nephew had complained about being harassed for being gay. She told the Associated Press that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy discouraged him from asking for help from military officials. "That phrase is just stupid," she said, "because it tells them they have no one to speak to."
At the request of Fort Worth Mayor Mike Moncrief, the head of the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Texas agreed this week to review the results of an investigation into allegations that law enforcement officers used excessive force during a June 28th raid on a newly opened gay bar, the Rainbow Lounge. City police and state alcohol control agents arrested seven men on public intoxication charges in the raid, and at least two were seriously injured. One of them, Chad Gibson, was released this week from a hospital after suffering a head injury that led to a blood clot in his brain. Witnesses during the raid said he was thrown headfirst into a wall and knocked to the floor by officers who later accused him of grabbing the groin of one of them. Gibson told local television stations this week that he did nothing of the sort, and witnesses said that he was roughed up for no apparent reason. The New York Times reported that another patron at the bar suffered broken ribs, and a third received a broken thumb during their arrests. The Fort Worth Police Department has temporarily suspended joint operations with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and both agencies say they're conducting internal investigations. Peaceful protests against the raid continued this week outside the Rainbow Lounge.
And finally, a gay kiss proved to be too much for security guards and a local police officer in another city in the Lone Star State. Carlos Diaz de Leon says he and four friends were at a Chico's Tacos restaurant in late June in El Paso, a popular local chain, when security guards noticed two of the men kissing and ordered them to leave. According to news reports, the guards told the men that faggot stuff wasn't allowed in the restaurant. De Leon, who described the kiss between his two friends as brief, called the police to complain. but an officer sided with the security guards, citing the Texas sodomy law, which was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2003. The city of El Paso passed an ordinance banning sexual orientation discrimination the same year. De Leon and his friends filed a complaint this week with the police department's internal affairs unit. A police spokesman told a local television station that the responding officer was a rookie who misinterpreted the law.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
Hello, Pacifica listeners. My name is Dr. Helen Caldicott, and I'm here to talk about Pacifica Radio and how at this very point in time, you, the listener, are crucial to its survival. The Pacifica election process has begun. Media democracy? Democracy in media? Sounds strange, doesn't it? Almost un-American, but it's true. The five radio stations owned by the Pacifica Foundation are controlled by their members. That's right, you members out there who've donated $25 or more in the last year are about to decide the fate of this precious media consortium. If you love this planet, my show is not heard on radio stations that get their money from defense contractors and oil companies and the Nuclear Energy Institute. They might manage to greenwash themselves on some so-called public media outlets, but not Pacifica. We take no corporate funding, and that has always made the difference. Why is Pacifica Radio so important? Because it's the only network that's non-biased and can therefore tell the truth to the American people. And what makes it even possible is democratic participation. Listeners like you stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility for your media. Members can become local station board members. Local board members can become national board members. You must take an active role in running these stations. They are yours. And as such, you must help to propel them into the best listened stations in the country. You can download all the paperwork from www.pacifica.org/elections, or you can call 866-PEACE, PEACE01. As George Orwell wrote, in times of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So please run for the board and bring in good governance. Tell the truth. Push forward the Pacifica mission. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott. Thanks so much for caring about this station, this network, and indeed, our beautiful, beloved planet.
KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Brian Vinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in case you didn't have enough to do this weekend, we have another event, which is a fundraiser for Legacy Community Health Services. Mm-hmm. And in the studio tonight to talk about this event, we
now
have...
Now, this is about after the other event we talked about in the last segment. We're just, right after that, you can leave and go right over to this one.
We're just trying to line up your weekend for you. And this is a fundraiser for Legacy, as I said. Sana Alton is the Community Relations Manager for Legacy. And we also have Keith Knapper, who is a alter ego for Cheyenne. We don't ever really get to see you out of out of drag. So
it's been nice.
In your other persona, see, yes. that people just don't understand about. So your other persona.
The event this weekend is the Miss Mint Julep. Is that correct?
Well, we kind of changed the name to Mint Julep over the years. This is our seventh year holding this fundraiser and contest. We started out as Miss Mint Julep, but it's kind of taken on its own character and evolved into a bigger contestant part, a bigger show. And so I think we just call it Mint Julep, right, Keith?
Well, it's mainly because we started out with Miss Mint Julep and involved the bars and organizations, and now it's gone community-wide, and we've added Mr. and Ms.
Oh, I see.
Oh, okay.
So we've covered everybody.
Yes. So this is going to happen at the BRB.
BRB.
Brazos River Bottom. That's 2400 Brazos, in case people out there don't know.
Yes. And it's going to be on Sunday.
Sunday.
Yes. 2 o'clock.
Sunday. Doors open at 2, and we're going to start the show promptly at 2:30. The admission is free. One of the reasons this event has always been free is that we want our clients to have a chance to be able to come. And, you know, most of our clients make less than $20,000 a year, and so every dollar really matters. So this is a way we can help raise money for our clients, but also allow them to come and enjoy a show. We're going to have some savory munchies. We get people to donate food. And lots of performers. I think that's the unique thing about this show, is that everybody in the community wants to come out and help us raise money. And that's kind of how the title got started, the contest. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, if I can say, it did start over cocktails. That's why we named it Mint Julep.
I can only imagine.
Well, right. Sana and I, being cohorts at that time, and I working in the development department, decided we would do something different to raise money for Legacy and involve the organizations and the bars. And that's how it actually started, over cocktails. So we decided to name it Mint Julep.
And so to raise money, you work off the tips from the performances.
Well, that's one way. Ideally, we have candidates that vie for these contests, the titles, Mr., Ms., and Miss Mint Julep. And this year we have 6 outstanding candidates. And each one of them is kind of known as it's the only title in the community that you can actually buy.
Oh.
I mean, that's how it started
out. That's great.
You know, so people agree to start fundraising for Legacy back in the first part of June till the contest, and then they have to come and perform at the contest, and whoever raises the most money wins. So it's not necessarily based on talent. What it's based on is a person's heart, I think, more than anything, because people who agree to raise money for an organization for 6 weeks, I think they really have a heart for those that are less fortunate. And that's one of the reasons why I think this contest is, it's a lot of fun, but it's also really special to both of us, because it brings the fundraising character out in people.
Also, you can't just write a check?
Well, sure you can. We take any and all donations,
all
honey.
I went last year and I had the best time, and there was a lot of money raised at the event itself.
It's a terrific event.
And I have to tell you that I'm still emotionally scarred from seeing Holly Redwood. That was, oh my gosh, because I know Eric outside of Legacy and his work with Legacy, but to see him in drag was, oh my God.
Well, he will be there again, will.
She will be there, so you can
come. She is not a pretty lady. I'm sorry, Eric. But it was a wonderful event, and it raised so much money last year.
Well, and you know, we always have a surprise. I mean, what would be Mint Julep without a surprise performer?
Oh, okay. Can you give us any hints?
Someone who's never performed before comes out, and this year it's our board chair. Jim Kovach.
Really? How about that?
Jim is, oh my gosh.
Should we tell, that's something.
Should we tell the name?
Miss Kitty Cash.
That's Jim? Oh my God. I love Jim, and I have to come in. I'll definitely be there to see that.
You know, see, that's the fun or novelty of this contest, is it stretches people to come out. A few years ago, we created the persona Quesadilla, who was a board member.
I love Quesadilla, and I hear she's retired now.
Yeah, she went into
rehab.
But, you know, I think her cousin's going to come this year.
That's what I hear.
Ben Chilada.
Ben Chilada will be there, yeah.
And, that, you know, you just, as I said, you never know who's going to come out and perform. We have brand new performers that have never performed. But the other thing, I think that this event is done for a drag show, because really that's what it is. It's a chance for, you know, our drag community to come out and help. It's the only, I think, community-based event that Legacy holds, and Keith and I put this event on. It's in the GLBT community. It's a big drag show. 1 year, I believe we set a record. We raised over $40,000.
That's incredible.
And each year, for at least the past 5 years, we've raised over $20,000 with this event, a dollar at a time.
Absolutely. Now, for our listeners that may not know what Legacy is about and what Legacy does for the community, can you give us kind of an idea?
Kind of the neat thing I think about Legacy is that back in 1978, it started as an all-volunteer STD organization. And as there's been need in the community, this organization has grown. This past year, we served over 66,000 client visits. That's amazing. We have three clinic locations. We specialize in healthcare, HIV services, and primary healthcare. With, I think, one kind of driving factor is that everybody deserves to access quality healthcare. And with our tough economic times, especially now, people don't have a lot of money. They're losing their health insurance. And where are they going to go?
If they ever had health insurance.
Exactly, because many don't. And especially in the GLBT community, domestic partner benefits aren't there for everyone. And many individuals rely on jobs where they don't make a lot of money. And to have to pay a lot for your health care and to maybe get discriminated against when you come in for your health care, I mean, those are barriers. And so hopefully Legacy's opened its doors to everyone. We try to make our cost affordable. It's on a sliding scale fee. And we just want to be able to provide quality healthcare services.
Absolutely. Now, are there any other fundraisers that are coming up that Legacy does?
Sure. We have a luncheon coming up the end of September. And Becca Cation Thrash is the chair this year of of that event. And I believe that our guest speaker is a Kennedy Shriver. I think it's Edward or one of the Kennedy Shrivers that's going to come in and be our guest speaker. I do not know the price of tickets for the luncheon, but it's kind of transcends that other fundraising community.
It's very, I want to say, Paper City type crowd.
Yes.
The very kind of socialite people. I went last year and it was, you know, very intimidating.
Well, I think that's the other unique thing about Legacy is that as we've grown, we've been able to reach out to a broader fundraising community, bigger foundations and things like that, because people want to see individuals have the right to access health care. And so we've added a few events. In January, we now do an event called Cabaret for a Cure that's based around HIV and AIDS services, and it's held at the Hilton of the Americas. And that's really based around entertainment and, again, a kind of a different audience. Mm-hmm. But we're very blessed in that we have a few different fundraisers. So I think, again, Legacy offers an opportunity for anyone, to be able to contribute a dollar at a time or to be able to go to the luncheon. So we're very happy about that as well.
So, Keith, tell us about what you might be doing this weekend. What's in your show, or can you tell us?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
It just happens.
It's organic, and it just kind of...
when it happens, it happens.
So spontaneous. So you have to be there to see it.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, well, this Sunday, when you have a chance, it's 2 o'clock, they open the doors, 2:30, it's going to begin.
I mean,
now, I know you assured us we were going to start on time, but I know about drag time.
No.
QST.
Fortunately for this event, when my name is attached to it, it usually starts on time. If it's 5 minutes late, it's okay, but it's not one of those hour late things.
Oh, no. Thank goodness.
No. I mean, it's in the middle of the afternoon, so what are you going to do? You're not going to be outside.
Sunday
so come inside.
It's too hot to be outside.
To the air conditioning. for a great show, for a great
plenty
fun.
Of libation.
I do want to go back a moment if I can.
Surely.
George Birch, a.k.a. Ginger Grant, was very instrumental in the last couple of years and a former Miss Mint Julep herself. And has really gone over and above, started this out and did a fundraiser Derby Day, which was in May?
Yes, in conjunction with Kentucky Derby.
Oh, to actually do like kind of a kickoff party type
That's
show
excellent.
For that goes toward Mint Julep as well. So give her kudos.
How did y'all decide to have it in July? I was wondering.
You know, I think that we were looking at kind of a, if there is such a thing, a void in the number of events in the community.
Yeah.
There were a lot of events in the fall and a lot of events in the spring, but the summer seemed to have some opportunity to create an event, and people drink kind of summer drinks, southern drinks, hopefully in the summer, adult libations.
Right.
And so I think that's how Mint Julep got started. We needed some kind of an event, or I wanted to do something in the summer to kind of add to the entertainment. And having it on a Sunday afternoon, let's face it, as we all get a little older, we don't want to stay out so late at night on a Sunday night. And so I thought having it in the afternoon gives everybody the opportunity to come and enjoy a show and still get home in a reasonable hour.
Yeah, I remember coming out to the event on the Sunday afternoon. It was for me, it was a very special opportunity to go see a show when you didn't want to stay out late on a Saturday night to go see some shows.
Right.
So this was an excellent opportunity, and it was well worth whatever you contribute to the good work being done by Legacy.
Now, I'm sure that Kitty Cash is getting a lot of instruction and drag, tutelage on how to be a perfect drag queen.
But of course.
Training.
Yes, the training, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait.
She'll be fabulous.
So who's been doing the training? Who's been helping her?
We're keeping all that under wraps.
I see.
Oh.
So you have to come and
you
see
have
the
to come
finished
and see.
Product.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a group endeavor, but I really thank Jim for agreeing to do this and kind of stretch himself, so to speak. But, again, also, I think it's an opportunity to raise a lot of money because people will pay money to see Jim.
Definitely.
I saw the look on your face, Brian.
I
you were
not,
quite
yeah.
surprised.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I love Jim's passion for Legacy and how his heart is in it. And so for him to do this, to go above and beyond to raise money for Legacy, I definitely will be there with cash to tip very generously.
Oh, yes.
It.
Remember to bring plenty of bills.
Plenty of dollars.
I wanted to say dollar bills, but, you know, hey, if you've got it, make them fives.
There you
go. Well, and, you know, we will accept credit card donations that day. If somebody really feels inspired and generous and has the ability, we also have kind of a celebrity auction for table waiters.
Oh, yeah.
And we will have some
You're
of our senior
off
most
the waiters.
Yes, we are.
Oh,
we'll have some of our senior most staff contributing in that endeavor, and so just lots of surprises. You have to be entertaining.
Now, where can our listeners get more information about Legacy?
If you go to our website at www.legacycommunityhealth.org, we have information, and they can contact me directly at salton@legacycommunityhealth.org. That's my email address, and I can give them more information about the show.
Okay.
I was going to ask you, can they do that? I also contact you directly about the show and the event. So, now again, where is it and when is it?
It's at the BRB Sunday afternoon. Doors open at 2, and the show will start promptly at 2:30. And again, we thank you all for having us on tonight and helping us promote everything. You guys are great.
About how long will it run?
You just never know. We've had shows that have been anywhere from 3.5 to 5 hours, so I think, no pun intended, it will drag on, because as long as someone wants to raise a dollar for Legacy, we're going to let them have that opportunity.
It's a great event. Anybody, if you've got your Sunday afternoon open, please go and do that.
And Legacy is one of those great organizations in Houston, so please come out and support a great organization.
Well, thank both of you for showing up tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you on Sunday.
See you Sunday.
This is Queer Voices.
myself, painting it black. I'm so low, you're the top of the stack. Never occurred to me, to put you back.
Phil Dutra, Another Day Alone from his actually extended play, Right Behind the Rain, and that was from 2007. This is Queer Voices. And now we go out to the cool and pleasant cornfields of Iowa and Joan Devlin.
Yes, this is Joan Devlin calling from Iowa. How are you guys doing? I heard it's very hot there.
It is so hot and so dry here, and the wind blows hot and dry. It's like living in the desert.
Oh, well, at least you can swim. We've had, our summer has been cool, which might sound nice, but when you have very few warm months in the year, it kind of stinks when ones that are supposed to be warm really aren't.
You have two guests this evening.
Yes, I do. I have Janelle Orsi and Emily Doskow, and they are the authors of The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community, which is some great advice in these troubled times. Emily and Janelle, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Yep.
This is Janelle.
Oh, hi. First of all, I wanted to ask you, where did you come up with the idea for this book? Was it just because of the change in the economy, or was it kind of something you'd always thought about and thought this would be a good time to introduce the concept?
Well, I came up with the idea kind of a couple years ago. In general, I was just thinking of ways to make the world a better place, and where I live in Berkeley, I saw a lot of people doing creative things to share resources, people sharing cars with each other, people forming co-housing, doing child care cooperatives, forming cooperatively owned businesses. And I realized that was just such a smart thing to do. It was a really great way to use the wealth of resources around us. And a lot of what motivates me is making the world a more sustainable place ecologically and reducing our impact on the planet. And also just finding ways for people to live less expensively and not have to spend so much money and have a more sustainable economy.
I wanted to talk about that, too, because, you know, we live in an age where increasingly, you know, the people you talk to every day or the people you even might consider your good friends could potentially be people that you don't see face-to-face much, if at all. So I kind of like the concept that along with saving money and simplifying your life, this was a great way to build community, because we've all been in that situation where we might have lived in a place for 5 years and still couldn't tell you who our neighbors are.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'd love to tell you about my neighborhood because, especially since I'm on a queer radio show tonight, if I may.
Sure.
I live in what we call casual co-housing, and what it is four households in Berkeley. There's basically two duplexes across the street from each other, and my housemate bought one with a lesbian couple and their child about 7 years ago, and they decided to cooperate and share on levels that most neighbors don't. So they share laundry facilities, they share all kinds of household goods, things like tools and a bicycle pump. They have meals together, and my housemate provides childcare. And so they're intentionally trying to create community. And then recently they bought the house across the street with a third lesbian couple and then rented out the front unit to a gay male couple. So it's kind of an intentional gay community, and it's not anything like what you might imagine to be like a commune or anything. We're really just neighbors, but we're neighbors who have decided to be there for each other, to share meals from time to time, to share garden space, and to sort of be like second, third aunties and uncles to each other's children.
I think that's great, too, because it gives, for the children, you know, they're growing up in a situation where they're interacting with many different types of people in a cooperative way. So I think that's probably teaching a good lesson to the kids that hopefully they'll pass on as they get older.
Right. It's a wonderful place for them.
And I think if I could add, Joan, the point that you were making about, you know, we often don't know our neighbors, and the community building aspect is really important, that sometimes people start out sharing for the purpose of saving money and then find that the community building part of it actually is almost more important or more makes more of a difference in their lives. And I participate in a neighborhood work group where we have a bunch of households that share. Each month we work on somebody's house and do a house project, and we definitely started that because of, you know, you save a lot of money if your neighbors paint your house instead of hiring somebody to paint your house. But for me, the best benefit has been getting to know all these neighbors and really feeling connected in my community.
What I think is great, too, is because we've seen, and, you know, I live in Cedar Rapids where we had terrible floods last year. Mm-hmm. Katrina is, you know, the work behind Katrina is still ongoing. And anybody who's been in this situation or around a situation where there's been a huge disaster comes quickly to realize that it is your neighbors and your friends and your community that you can probably count on more than these outside entities, you know, because of just the red tape.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's great that you're already, you know, you didn't wait for a disaster to happen. You're already establishing that. You're already establishing that level of concern and caring and taking care of each other and yourselves at the same time.
Yeah, and part of what happens, I think, when you do that is that you create the environment where, you know, it grows and flourishes in, you know, non-disaster times, but then those people really are there for you if there are problems like that.
And that brings me to the next question, because I was very impressed with the book. The book is very complete. It talks about everything from carpooling to co-housing to exchanging homes for vacation purposes to, as you said, sharing cars, et cetera, et cetera. But what I liked about it was you even laid out, you know, the potential negatives. If we all decide to go in together on this house and this individual does not pay, or if you have somebody who for whatever reason isn't upholding their share of whatever, you know, deals or bargains or, you know, things that you've decided to do, you even have really great suggestions for, again, not in a confrontational or negative way, but in a cooperative way of how to really ensure that everyone kind of upholds their end of the bargain and helps to make things work.
Right. We realize that change is a fact of life, and if anyone's going to be sharing a car with a neighbor or starting a tool lending library, that by nature it's not going to last forever and people will move on. And the thing is, a lot of people are scared to share for the very reason that things might change or things might end. And so that's what we did, is we gave people a list of questions they could talk through with their co-sharers and just be ready and know what's going to happen when these things come up so that no one has to worry about it.
And you said you had your own kind of a little cooperative community that you were living in. How has that worked? And also, you know, have you heard, now that the book's kind of out and people are maybe taking you up on some of your ideas, have you heard some stories about how it's worked in other communities?
Well, the book's only been out for a month, but it's amazing that people have been coming out of the woodwork and giving us all kinds of stories about how they're sharing chickens with their neighbors or how they're going to buy a car with three other neighbors. And so really beautiful stories. There's actually three gay couples we know down in San Diego who have decided to start a study group around the book, and they all live in close proximity to each other, and they're going to get together on a weekly basis for a while and talk about ways that they could share with each other and how to set good boundaries with each other. And one of the first things they're thinking of doing is buying a hybrid vehicle, because three of them have old clunker cars, and they thought, well, it'd be great to have a reliable car and we could just all share it and share the expense. But you also asked how is my living arrangement going. It's wonderful. I've lived there for about 5 years, and I do a meal exchange with my neighbors across the street. They cook for me on Mondays, and I cook for them on Wednesdays. And we occasionally have big meals all together with them and my other neighbors. And then I do gardening in their yard with their 3.5-year-old, and we kind of meet up in the garden and grow vegetables and share them. And it's just a wonderful place to live. It's a great environment, and I feel like people are there. If I need something, I feel comfortable asking.
And we're talking to Janelle Orsi and Emily Doskal about their book, The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. And I guess the other half of what I want to talk about with you regarding this book is, you know, the timing is perfect, because in these times are tough right now. People are losing their jobs, and a lot of people just tend to think, oh, you know, if I lost my job and couldn't get another one quickly, you know, what would I do? How would I be able to survive? And I really like the fact that, you know, this book, you know, even if you're not, you know, hopefully in a situation where, you know, you're struggling, it really tells you how to just pare it down, you know, things that you can do that, you know, could enable you to not have to think that, you know, if you were, you know, God forbid, laid off, you would suddenly have to change your entire way of living.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's designed to help people, you know, live a more sustainable lifestyle and sort of need less stuff, therefore need less money to buy all the stuff that they need. And that can be anything from, you know, a vacuum cleaner or a bread maker all the way to a car, as Janelle's talking about. So it really can help people out in bad times. And we're seeing, I think, more and more stories like that, of neighbors getting together and buying things like lawnmowers or snowblowers, depending where they live and what season it is. You know, that they really, there's no reason for everybody to have their own. So it cuts down on consumerism and cuts down on people's expenses, and also is better for the planet, obviously, if fewer things are being produced.
I was going to ask you, too, has it given anybody that, you know, because if you pare yourself down, if you have your community and you're sharing, you know, has it really freed anybody up to say, wow, now I can do what I want to do instead of what I have to do? You know, now instead of having to work this job that's a grind and that I hate because I need, you know, the salary it pays, I've pared my life down to the point that I can go ahead and try to start that small business I've always wanted to start, or go to work part-time and work on, you know, something else, art or writing or something in the afternoon. Have you heard anybody tell you those kind of stories yet?
It's kind of hard to give a clear before and after story, but in many ways I could tell from my own experience that I am living the life I want to live, and I don't have to work as many long, hard hours as a lot of people do because of the money I save by living where I live, in terms of sharing housing, sharing transportation sometimes, and sharing food, and, you know, doing a lot of things in cooperation with others that saves me a lot of money and helps me live more simply. And so I think that a lot of people would say that their quality of life is so much better because they're not having to work hard and fill their household full of all kinds of stuff and spend all this money. So yeah, I definitely think that it'll help people take that step and reclaim the time that they need.
I would hope, too, that the building community part of it would also encourage people, you know, that to kind of have almost a sounding board or a group of people that are supportive, you know, around you, you know, as part of the community building, you know, might inspire people to kind of get outside of themselves a little bit and do something different that maybe they wouldn't have tried, you know, if they hadn't taken that first step and done the community of, you know, and the sharing solution as you presented it.
Joan, this is Glenn. You have 2 minutes left.
Thank you. And so that's, you know, that was my thought, because it's really, you read the book and you think, wow, this is a great idea. Why haven't people thought of this before? You know? You know, why do you think, you know, it's an idea whose time has definitely come, but why do you think, you know, it's kind of fallen by the wayside in the last few years? I mean, I know back in the 60s people did the communal thing, but why do you think kind of now it almost seems like nobody even thinks about that?
Well, I think we've gotten really used to the convenience of all having our own stuff in our own spaces, and each household having 2.3 vehicles on average, and so we've gotten used to it, but I think we were enjoying the convenience for so long we didn't realize the impact it was having in other parts of our lives, and the impact on our planet, the impact on people and their jobs, and just on our personal happiness and satisfaction. And so I think people are waking up now to other kinds of quality of life issues and realizing that building community can bring so much more joy and wealth into their lives.
All right, and to close up, I wanted to ask the two of you, how can people get the sharing solution?
Well, you actually very kindly, there on your radio website, there's a link to our blog, which in turn has a link to the page where they can purchase it from NOLA.com, and independent bookstores as well are carrying it. So it's widely available wherever you buy your books.
Great. Well, I want to thank the two of you. We've been speaking to Janelle Orsi and Emily Doskow about their book, The Sharing Solution, How to Save Money, Simplify Your Life, and Build Community. And good luck, and thank you so much for a wonderful book and some great ideas.
Great. Thanks so much, Joan.
And you're listening to 90.1 KPFT, Queer Voices.
They could to revive him. His long-kept secret was a secret no more. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Doug Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Gizbo.
In celebration of Pride Month, the Pacifica Radio Archives launched an LGBT time capsule project. They put out a call for people in the Los Angeles area to come in and record their personal stories and any messages they'd like to leave behind for rebroadcast 50 years in the future. Among the people who responded were two amazing youngsters who took the opportunity to go into a studio by themselves and interview each other.
I'm Benjamin, and this is my sister, Jessica Pensner. She's 16 years old.
Hi, I'm Jessica. This is my brother, Ben, and he is 13 years old. Okay, Ben, so when did you come out?
I was 10, fifth grade. It was during a school day, and my teacher, Jude, he was gay, too. He is gay, too. And I thought that I liked a couple guys in my class. I was really, really confused because of all the things that was going on. I was 10. I don't think I knew very much about that kind of stuff. So then, the first time I told anybody was my mom. I went back to my mom's house after school, and then I sort of put my face to the back of my mom on my mom's back. Then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And she was like, "What did you say?" And then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And then she was like, "Oh, okay." And that's all she said.
And you told me after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you? Because I couldn't see inside your head at the time.
It was really different for me. I mean, I've never experienced something like that before. So we were in Mom's room, and I told you, and I said, "Jessica, I think I'm gay." And then you said, "I think I'm bi." And then when we hugged, we were crying, and then I felt really, really open. I felt, like, really close to you.
And that was, like, the first time that we felt so close, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because you were only 10, and that was a bad time for me, too. We were both just going through some really weird times. I'm really glad you told me then.
Me too. So, how did you feel about it?
Oh my gosh. Well, when you told me, I wasn't just crying. I was sobbing. I didn't know how to feel, like, to tell you the truth. You know, I was, still am, bisexual. But you, my brother, being gay was such a trip for me. I wasn't sad that you were gay. I wasn't disappointed or anything. It was just so overwhelming. And then afterwards, I had some time to think about it and to figure out my feelings, and I was so happy. I was one of those girls who would always want the gay best friend who we could, you know, hang out with and go talk about girly things, and oh my gosh, that person is my brother. That, it's amazing to have you, Ben. It really is. And the fact that you're there for me and are always so nice, you're just such a nice person. And I can't believe that I have you. What did you talk to Jude about anyway?
Oh, fifth grade teacher. After I told our parents, our dad thought of go talking to Jude because he knew that he was gay because we found out about a paper that they handed out at school.
That said that Jude was gay?
No, that said that Jude was living with his husband.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which basically says that Jude is gay.
Yeah. So then Dad said, maybe we should go talk to him and see what his perception of this was. So after school, Dad and Mom went to the school after all the classes were done. We sat down at one of the tables, and then I told Jude, and then he was like, "Okay." And then we talked about how he was gay and how he came out, that he couldn't come out until college. and he thought of me as really brave of going, of coming out at 10 years old. And then we talked about his high school years, how he forced himself to keep his girlfriend because his friends were not gay supporters, and how he thought of it. Then he said that it felt like torture. So he came out in college and he regretted it, that he didn't come out sooner, and that he was really happy for me.
Are you happy that you came out so soon?
Yeah. I don't have to lie as much as I thought I did.
Did you know at 10, or did you know earlier than that?
I had a pretty okay perception of it. At 10, I was still iffy about it. There was this one person that I did tell in middle school. I forgot who he was, but he said that you can't know until you're 17. So I was like, oh, okay. But later on, I got a better understanding of it, and then I said, wow, that was such a lie. But anyway, at 10, I was not sure at all. I was confused, as most people are at that age, if they think of it.
Well, now we go to Renaissance Arts Academy, right?
Yeah.
And we came there right after that whole fifth grade fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
And our school is very open with that kind of thing. And anyone who is of any sexual orientation does not feel out of place. Did you feel like you had a better understanding of who you were in that school?
Yeah. I had a lot of people to talk to. I felt so much better at Marin Arts than at VCCS, my middle school, because it was really small, so everybody knew each other.
Is it easier to talk about it with your friends at Marin Arts?
Yes. Yeah, it really is. I actually talk about it as a regular subject now, because I've talked to them about it so much. There's this girl named Taylor, and she's really good. She's a friend of mine, and she's a lesbian. And me and her talk about it in detail. It's really nice to talk to her about that. I'm so happy that I don't have to bottle it up so much. It makes me feel incredible. It's awesome. I've done it before. I've stopped myself from telling people that I was gay. And I have to lie, and I'm not the best liar. I suck at lying.
Yeah, you do.
Then they ask me again, and I have to lie again.
Well, you don't have to lie anymore.
I know.
You don't have to lie to anyone, even if they are against what you are. It doesn't matter. They can't do anything to you. And if you ever need help, I'm here, and Sierra is here, and all our friends are here. Just don't worry about it, okay?
Okay.
So now you're at Marin Arts, and you're the viola prodigy. You are the gay, blonde, blue-eyed viola prodigy. How does that feel to be so wonderful?
I like it how everybody knows me, and I don't know them. It's fun. Sometimes I feel kind of famous at that school. It's really, really nice.
That's good. You're going to play something, right?
Yeah.
You want to go do that right now? Yes?
Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
I'm going to be playing the second Bach cello suite in D minor. This is Jessica Pensner.
And this is Ben Pensner.
And we thank you for listening to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a long road, it was a long time, it was a long way around this stuck mind. It was a way that I was looking at the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. It was a late night, it was the late fall. It was a late hour to make a late call. Sometimes it takes a stand, sometimes it's quite empirical, and sometimes it's so grand. But most of all, it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith. Well, it was a new dream, it was an old car, it was a back road and a bright star, and it was a thing. About time. Sometimes the earth is shaking, sometimes the world is mine. But most of all, it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith. It was a lifeline, it was a long rest, it was a lifelong dream and a hard test, and it was the things that I was bearing and the things I couldn't see. It was the way that you were looking at me. Sometimes it takes a miracle, sometimes it takes a stand, sometimes it's quite empirical, and sometimes it's so grand. All it needs to be a sudden leap of faith. It's a leap of faith.
Trett Fury from 2007 and her her cut Leap of Faith from the CD True Compass.
Oh, is that it? No music, no bump music or anything?
Don't go see Bruno. Yeah, okay.
It's offensive.
Really?
Yes. I just wanted to tell you that. I just, you know.
I didn't see it. I saw the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
It was the number one movie last week.
Right.
But that, so what?
So it, what? It's so extremely
what? I mean,
homophobic.
Bad movies get make money sometimes.
It's extremely homophobic. Every possible cliche, homophobic slur there is, it's in it. It's racist. It's
well, if you are a living, breathing human being, you will be offended by it because they you know, everybody gets.
And that's kind of the
everybody
point.
Gets gored.
It's kind of the point, but you know, why support it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, we get that real life every day, so why go pay money to go see it?
Why be tortured on screen?
Yeah, especially at, what, $9.50 or something? Is that what a movie costs these days? Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, at the matinee, you can get for $7.50 sometimes, depending on where it is.
To sit there and have somebody insult you over again.
Oh, and assault, insult your sensitivities in all ways. But anyway, be your own choice, but GLAAD, which is the watchdog arm of the GLBT community, says no go.
I agree with.
Next week, come back and visit with us again. We've had Joel Burns was here at first segment. He's the District 9 Fort Worth council member talking about the raid on a gay club.
And then we had E.B. Allen and Megan Stabler talking about the HRC event this Saturday.
Yes, and we had Sana Alton, the community relations with Legacy Community Health.
And Joan Devlin, we had her on from Iowa. You know, Joan used to be here live in Houston when she lived here, but since she had to move away for work, we bring her in by telephone sometimes. She does these wonderful book reviews.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that.
And we'll see you next Monday.
Yes, please tune in.
Yes, okay. This is Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The Houston Press Music Awards Showcase, featuring 50 bands on 10 stages. Sample the sounds of over 50 local Houston bands on Sunday, July 26th. Doors open at 4 p.m., bands begin at 5 p.m. Wristbands, t-shirts, and tanks are on sale now at Cactus Music, on HoustonPress.com, and at all participating venues the day of the event. Participating venues include House of Blues, Hard Rock Cafe, Rock Bar, Mosaic, Flying Saucer, Isis Houston, Martell's, Red Cat Jazz Cafe, and Dean's Credit Clothing. Attendees must be over 21. New this year, complimentary shuttle services provided by Super Shuttle. Proceeds benefit the Music Therapy Center of Houston. Coming July 26th. Don't miss this year's Houston Press Music Awards Showcase. KPFT, Houston.
KPFT is currently accepting nominations for delegates to the local station board. The local station board is composed of listeners, volunteers, and staff, elected to bring diverse voices from our region into the dialogue between community and the station, and to assist with fundraising, community outreach, program support, and general governance. The local station board, quite simply, shapes the future of KPFT. There are three ways to qualify to vote and run. Contribute at least $25 to one of the stations, complete 30 or more verified hours, or obtain a special waiver from the local station board. Complete voting, nomination, and deadline information is at kpft.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.